Blog Talk Radio.
And nowhere to be found.
And then, you know, leading up to this tournament, he comes out and says, I don't have to have a great year. I don't have to win a major for it to be a great year. Tiger, are you kidding me? Come on. You have 14 majors. You're not chasing Jack anymore. I told you last week that narrative is over. You're chasing number 15 at this point. Not chasing Jack. Forget about Jack. Jack is long gone. You're not going to catch him. But now, to me, it seems like Tiger has come to grips with his own mortality as a golfer. Which, you know, it's fine. I mean, listen, he does have 14 majors. So that, like somebody, he won those 14 majors. So at worst, he goes down as the second greatest golfer of all time. There's nothing wrong with being the second greatest at anything in life, sports or otherwise. But this is where Tiger Woods is at right now. The sad part, and the part that kind of annoys me, is that media people who are coming out and saying that this year has been monumental. If he doesn't win a champ, wasn't even if he doesn't win a major, are you kidding me? Okay, how many tournaments he wins? If he wins PGA champion, if he wins PGA Player of the Year, then you know what? Majors don't count because there's no way to be. If you like, I don't care. Like if you don't win a major, I don't see how you can be PGA Player of the Year if you don't win a major. I always lean towards a guy that wins a major. If a guy wins, like Adam Scott has won the Masters, Adam Scott has been just about in every major this year. He's in second place right now. Don't care about these other side tournaments. I mean, they're not meaningless, but like, it's all about the majors, as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, forget about that. That's not really important. This is about Tiger Woods coming to grips with his own, again, golf immortality with his comments and with the things he said, even the things he said up leading up to his tournament. You know, five, 6 years ago, Tiger Woods was about the majors and nothing else. It was all about the majors. Even when he won tournaments like the WGC, it still was all about the majors. That Tiger is done. So not only Tiger, it won't, is not the same physically, mentally Tiger is not the same. Mentally, he's not the same. Again, Jason Duffner is 9 under. He'll probably tee off around 245. Adam Scott, Jim Furyk, Matt Kuchar. Kuchar is due to win a major, by the way. He's been a very good player for a while. Kuchar, you know, you have Justin Rose, who won the U.S. Open. So you have two of the three major winners who are well in contention. And Adam Scott and Justin Rose, who won the Masters and U.S. Opens. Furyk is always, Furyk, you know, seems to find himself in the mix of some of these Grand Slams at times. So he's certainly somebody to watch as well. 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, innocent until proven guilty, or guilty until proven innocent. We'll talk about that on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Is your call number on this latest edition of Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. Of course, you have a couple of things coming up for the future on future shows. NFL preview, in a couple of weeks, probably a week before the season kicks off, we'll do that. Season 6 of the Cyril Quinn Review is coming up that weekend, the first weekend in September. So keep your eyes on that. Keep your eyes on that as well. Probably, I would think September. It might even not even be September. It might be August 31st. August 31st. Well, probably that first. We'll do it the week. We'll probably do it that weekend of the football of the NFL season. It might be after the Thursday kickoff game, which is at least September 5th. So thinking September 7th. September 7th probably be the season premiere of the Cyril Quinn Review of Cyril Quinn Review / Saturday Morning Wake Up Call Season 6 of the program. Albert Pujols being accused of taking PEDs by Jack Clark. Pujols has threatened legal action against Jack Clark. Jack Clark, who formerly of the St. Louis Cardinals, now works for one of their radio affiliates, or did work for them. He was, of course, fired by their radio affiliate for making those comments. I don't know what Jack Clark is doing. I think, you know, Jack Clark being a part of the St. Louis Cardinal family. Listen, news is news. Information is information. So if somebody comes to Jack Clark and says, hey, you know what? I heard Albert was using PEDs. I heard Albert was using PEDs back when, a couple years back. You might want to check it out, you know. Clark is in the media at this point, being a radio guy. That's fine. You're Jack Clark. You talk to the people, do the research, and talk to Albert, and then take it from there. Jack Clark just, you know, allegedly heard from Albert Pujols' trainer, who has since denied everything, of course, that he used PEDs. And again, Jack Clark being a former baseball player, you gotta just be smarter. If you have a Pujols, you know, I don't know how far you're going to get with this lawsuit. Albert Pujols, again, you can understand where Pujols is coming from. When you've worked as hard as he's worked over the course of your career to build this pristine reputation. And remember, before this, there had been no, like, Albert Pujols' name hadn't been sniffed as far as taking PEDs. So there had been zero speculation. There have been guys who have not been tested, who have not tested positive, who have been, you know, who have had rumors of taking PEDs. Mike Piazza is one of them. It's one of the reasons why Piazza is not in the Hall of Fame right now. So, you know, even any just whiff of a PED and a big-time power hitter, which Pujols has been for the whole course of his career, is going to, you know, is going to draw attention. Again, I don't know, and Tiger right now is 3-over in the PGA Championship. So again, he's two over for the day. So Tiger not making any hay in this third round. You know, if you have a Pujols, I mean, all you can do is just threaten a lawsuit. I mean, Cardinals did fire Jack Clark. That's all they can do to him. You know, it's just one of those things. If you have a push, it's just one of those things where, you know, you got to get out there and say, hey, you know, this is not me. This is not who I am. I've never tested positive. And you better not, and if you're Albert Pujols, you better not ever test positive. Okay? You better not ever test positive. Because Albert Pujols is the same guy who a couple of years ago was on the cover of Sports Illustrated begging sports fans to not lump him in with all the other alleged PED users, whether it be, you know, David Ortiz, Manny Ramirez, so on and so on, you know, A-Rod, Barry Bonds, and that whole crew. So, you know, right now, I give Albert Pujols the benefit of the doubt. He's had no character issues. He's been a model in the model system, class individual. So I give him the benefit of the doubt. For now, but again, you're going to have to wait years after he's retired, a few years down the road to completely believe that he's never used PEDs. That's just how it is now in baseball. I mean, these guys, you know, they come up clean, and then a couple years later, you find out that indeed they were using were on the juice. So, you know, I think you have to give Pujols the benefit of the doubt. For now, you have to give him the benefit of the doubt. For now, 347-215-6180 is your call number. When we return, we'll get into some Johnny football and why his college career should be over. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Silicon Review. We'll be right back. Join us to talk about the AFC South. Can, you know, Houston looking to try to take that next step? Can Indianapolis build on their surprising year last year? And her beloved Tennessee Titans, who knows what's going to happen with the Titans? Is Jake Locker a legit NFL quarterback? We'll talk about that and a number of things within that division and some things NFL as well. Let me get her thoughts on this Riley Cooper situation. And yeah, I don't understand how Riley Cooper is still on the team. I don't get it. I mean, now it's gotten to a point to where people, you know, are kind of like defending him. You got some people in small circles defending him, which just blows my mind. But, you know, it's what is the world we live in right now. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Johnny Manziel, who just can't stay out of the headlines. And I think part of him likes to be in the headlines. That's a big part of his problem right now. Apparently was signing memorabilia and getting paid for it at last year's BCS championship weekend or during that time in January. One of his close advisors apparently told somebody this would be the last thing that he signs for free, and after that he had a 5-figure deal with a company on sports cards and memorabilia and things of that nature. Again, there's been no proof of cash exchange in terms of anybody seeing that, but right now, of course, it is under NCAA investigation, and it doesn't help, by the way, that the NCAA is so big. I mean, we all know how big of a hypocrisy NCAA is. NCAA, in the same week that happens, had an online store that had Manziel and Jermaine Clowney but jerseys for sale with their names on it. Now, of course, it's been removed, but that's why nobody can take the NCAA serious. Like, you're trying to crack down on these rules, and players can't get paid, and players get suspended for selling jerseys and things of that nature, but yet you had a website that had players' jerseys for sale with their names on it, by the way. Not just the number of the player, the name as well on the back of the player's jersey. That, you know, so who, you can't take the NCAA serious when it comes to some of these rules that they have that they're coming up with or sometimes even blame the players for breaking the rules. But Johnny Manziel, I don't think he'll be suspended because nobody like they haven't been there's been no trace of the money. And to me, unless until you can trace the money, I don't think you can prove anything until you can trace the money. So I don't think he'll be suspended for the season. But let's be honest, you know, this is a guy who is always going to be a magnet for a lightning rod for the media and a lightning rod for controversy. He is his own worst enemy. Okay? He is his own worst enemy. You know, it's not like, I don't think there's a witch hunt within the media, within the public, to go out there and get Johnny Manziel. I really don't believe that. I believe Johnny Manziel loves the spotlight, and I believe that Johnny Manziel just, you know, cannot handle being Johnny. Johnny Manziel can't handle Johnny football. You know, Johnny Manziel, the football player, is fine. Johnny football, the celebrity slash, you know, superstar, just the two don't mix. The two just absolutely don't mix. And he continues to put himself in terrible positions, you know, the frat party, the Peyton Manning, you know, the Manning Passing Academy. It's just one thing after another. And, you know, somebody brought this up, a writer brought this up this week. You know what, Brian, how about just turning pro? You know, how about just turning pro? If you're turning pro, you're not worrying about breaking any rules, you're getting paid, and you will be famous every day of your life. Just turn pro. I don't know what kind of player he's going to be. Johnny Manziel, as a football player in the NFL, translating as a football player in the NFL, I'm not high on him at all. I think, you know, there are a few reasons I'm not that high on him. But at least, you know, at least you can be yourself. At least you can be yourself as far as this celebrity goes. At least you can be yourself from that standpoint. Because if I'm Texas A&M, if I'm the coach, if I'm the players on that team, I'm at this point where I'm just fed up with I'm fed up with this whole Johnny football persona. I'm fed up with asking questions about Johnny Manziel left and right instead of talking about, you know, the team competing for a national championship or an SEC championship. I'm just fed up with it all. Now, again, no coach, no players have come out and publicly criticized Manziel, but if you're somebody in that locker room, you're a player in that locker room, you can't be happy with the way things have gone, with the way things have gone in the last couple of months, basically this entire year since he's won the Heisman. Johnny Manziel is not the first time big-time college athlete to ever win the Heisman. And he's acting like, you know, he's really acting like this is like a disease. The Heisman Trophy is a disease that he just can't handle it. And again, there are athletes, there are people out there in walks of life who cannot handle fame. Who fame was the last thing that should have happened. That was the worst thing that could have happened to him. That's just the way of life. It doesn't just go in sports. It's in celebrity. You see these movie stars and entertainers, you know, have drug habits after they get rich and famous, and, you know, so it's not unprecedented by any stretch of imagination. But if you're Texas A&M, you know, at some point, then again, they're never going to suspend them. But you're Texas A&M at some point. I wonder how many conversations the coaches had with Manziel personally about him toning it down and kind of stepping back and trying to stay out the spotlight. And it's gotten to a point where Manziel has become bigger than Texas A&L. He's become bigger in life within that university. He absolutely has. And there might be some people getting into his ear, and it still might not matter. Is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. When we return, we'll get into some baseball. A-Rod returns to the field. What's next for him and New York Yankees? We'll talk about that on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. Excuse me, of the Cyril Quinn Review, formerly the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. Now 347-215-6180 is your late 6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Saturday of the Serial Quinn Review. Breaking Bad returns tomorrow night, 9 p.m. AMC. Second half of season five. That's what these shows are doing right now. Of these monumental shows, they'll run so many episodes and then break them up so they can make more money and break them up into two seasons when they are one season. Sopranos is the same thing. And put in season six had 21 episodes broken up into 13 and 9, made a ton of money. And so Breaking Bad taking a cue from that with the in the same fashion. I'm very, when we left off with Walt, he was, seemed to be in a calm place with the family. And I didn't believe him for a second that he was out of the drug gang. I think he just, I don't believe that for a second. He has all the people in the prison killed, gives Jesse his $5 million, and he has a family moment, of course, and then, you see Hank find out that WW, Walter White, doesn't stand for Walt Whitman, but Walter White, and that's where we left off. Great ending. It was a great ending. You were just wondering, and things were too peaceful at that little family gathering they had, and of course Hank read in that book that was given to him by Gail Benneker the previous season. So, the obvious question is, will Walt die? If he does, who takes him out? Is it Hank, Skyler, Jesse, Cancer? Who takes Walt out? I don't think Walt's going to die. I don't. I don't think Walt. I think that would kind of be, I could see Zach Gilligan going the Sopranos, Sopranos route. Maybe at the end of the Sopranos, forget about the blackout. I'm not talking about that, but putting aside the blackout, Tony Soprano looked like he was going to go to jail. He was going to be indicted. One of his captains, Carlo, had ratted him out because Carlo's son had got picked up. So he was. And that gun charge as well that was still hanging over his head also was still on the books. So it seemed like they were going into the direction where Tony was going to go, end up going to jail and be taken, away from family and taken away from being the head of the Soprano crime family. And I think Walt's ego, Walt's pride is going to be taken away in some way, shape, or form. I think death will be an obvious one. I think death will be almost an obvious way for Walt to go out. I don't think he's going to die. For many seasons leading up to this, I thought that there was no question that he would be killed off, considering all the things he's done over the years, all the heinous acts that he's done. In particular to Jesse. But I don't think that's going to be the case. For whatever reason, I could be dead wrong. Could absolutely be dead wrong. But again, looking forward to it. One of the best shows of all time. Bryan Cranston has masterfully played this character. One of the great characters of all time, without question. You wonder what direction Jesse's going to go in now. Now that some way, shape, or form that Walt is going to lure Jesse back into the business. It's going to happen. Just wondering how Walt is going to get Jesse back in. So again, final season of Breaking Bad coming up tomorrow night. Again, looking forward to it, and also the character Lydia. How Walt and her, that is a dangerous combination, her and Walt working together. 347-215-6180. 1-800 is your call number. When we return, we will look at the NFC, at the AFC South. That's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. After the 12 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review, 347-215-6180 is your call number as we get into continue our countdown to kickoff NFL 2013. And we will do that with Roslyn Ross, who joins us. Roslyn, how you doing?
I'm well. How about you?
Good. Been doing fine. It's been a long time here. Hope you've enjoyed your summer here.
Yeah, I was going to say, nice to talk to you again. Nice to catch up with you. And, yeah, it's been a pretty good summer. So, but glad football is back.
Absolutely. No question about it. As preseason is in full swing now. Full swing now after the kickoff, after the Hall of Fame kickoff last Sunday. And you had that whole Hall of Fame weekend. Did you have any, like, what did you Did you watch the Hall of Fame, not the game, but the Hall of Fame ceremonies?
You know, I've only seen pieces of it. I saw bits and pieces of it, and then I was able to go and catch some stuff on YouTube as well. I mean, particularly I was looking at Staff and Chris Carter. And just a great weekend for those guys. A lot of hard work put in for all those years in the NFL, so it's nice to see them going into the Hall of Fame.
There's no question about it. All candidates were certainly worthy of being Hall of Famers. Roslyn, this division, AFC South here, you have two playoff teams returning from last year. You have a team in your Tennessee Titans that can go in either direction, depending on the quarterback play, and you have a god-awful team in Jacksonville. So pretty good division outside of Jacksonville. What are your thoughts? Before we get into the Titans, what are your thoughts all around about this division?
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned, you know, the fact of, you know, you brought up the quarterbacks just then in the intro. Because to me, with the exception of Houston, but to me, this is going to be a story of quarterbacks across the division. Because when you look at a team like the Colts, who after coming off of an 11-5 season, which was, you know, pretty remarkable given that most people didn't think they would do that well. They had a rookie quarterback. They also have their coach, Chuck Pagano, who was out receiving chemotherapy for leukemia, who was going to be out most of the season. You just wouldn't have guessed that that team would have done as well as they did. But they were awesome. And it really did, you know, Luck's play was a representation of just the sort of this whole fantasy ride they were on all season. He was able to set the rookie record. But, you know, on the other side of that, he set another record as well. He took a lot of sacks last season. So they got a new offensive coordinator who was with Andrew Luck in Stanford, Pep Hamilton, who was brought in, you know, nearly, I don't know, a nanosecond after Bruce Arians got his promotion and was moved over to head coach in Arizona. So I think his number one goal was going to be, you know, with their new offensive line that they put together, I think the number one goal was going to be to make sure that their quarterback, their franchise quarterback, you know, to put it more specifically, is protected better this season. And I think that Tep Hamilton and Andrew Luck have the comfortability to make sure that that happens, because they were together for a while and they set some records at Stanford as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how much more Andrew progresses this season. But to me, that's the story of the Colts. It's definitely going to be the story of, you know, the Jaguars as well. When you look at Blaine Gabbert, who did not look – he didn't impress at all in the way he came out in the Jags preseason game, and they have a first-year head coach in Gus Bradley. And, you know, it just wasn't the type of debut you want to see from Blaine Gabbert. He almost threw an interception on his first play, and then he didn't have the comfort zone of MJB out there, who is recovering from a foot injury. And the other part of that is, you know, a little side story to the game from the weekend, but this Justin Blackmon character. Like, is he ever going to grow up? He got into an altercation on the sidelines, and Maurice Jones-Drew had to walk him back to the locker room to get him calmed down. But he already is recovering from a groin injury, and then he's going to have to sit out the first four games of the season because of his multiple alcohol-related arrests over the last 3 years. And then he comes out, you know, not even playing in a preseason game and gets into an altercation with Carroll, who was playing for the Dolphins. So it's just like you wonder, when is this guy going to grow up? I mean, certainly Blaine Gabbert could use the weaponry, use him at wide receiver, because he needs to find some sweet zone, some sweet spot, some comfort zone pretty quickly, or I don't know that Gabbert keeps his job. And the Titans, we weren't able to see much from Jake Locker. I know we'll talk a little bit more about them, but he has been shaky in his training camp practices, and then he was shaky in his start in the preseason game. You wonder where that's going. I like the story of the Texans, though. They're the one team that sort of veers off from this quarterback narrative, and their story may really could be at wide receiver, with now finally having a guy in DeAndre Hopkins that stood out and that could actually be the complement to Andre Johnson that they need on the other side to really make this offensive attack even more of a force. That, you know, that's my thoughts pretty early on, but it's all about, I mean, I don't know that that's different across the league. It seems to be a lot about quarterbacks in the AFC South pretty early on here, and a lot of shoring up that has to happen before these teams can really make a strong run from the division in the AFC.
The Texans have a brutal schedule. They open up at San Diego, who I believe is going to be improved, at San Diego, home to Tennessee, at Baltimore, home to Seattle, at San Francisco, home to St. Louis. They end the year at Indianapolis, home to Denver, at Tennessee. They have three West Coast trips, which can always be brutal for a team, you know, even in the Midwest, still going to the West Coast. San Francisco,
exactly.
San Diego, and Arizona. Not as bad for like a Philadelphia, New York Giants, for a Philadelphia or New York team, but still going out to the West Coast, So they have three of those. They are the most talented team in the division, one of the most talented teams in the NFL. They have top players at every position, at every skill position, probably maybe the best defensive player in all of football right now, in J.J. Watt. What about Arian Foster? There's a lot of talk, and I'm not sure. I believe it until I see it. But there's a lot of talk that this could be a year where he begins to show some wear and tear from all the accumulation of, you know, carries and action that he's gotten over the past two to three years. He's been one of the most used backs in the NFL. They predicated the offense off the run game. He's going to get the ball. That's why people love him on fantasy. What about him? What do you expect out of him this year?
You know, I do expect that there'll be just a little bit of drop off. I don't think it'll be this extreme, you know, where he'll go missing in the way that some people are talking about it. But I mean, you're right. That's a team that employs you know, a very run-specific offense, and he gets the bulk of the carries. You know, it's not what's happening across the league where there's really, you know, there's a divvying up of ball carries. That doesn't really happen in Houston. He gets the ball, and he's their guy, their go-to guy. One thing about Arian Foster is, you know, it's funny. I followed him for a little while on Twitter. I still may be following him. Maybe he's gone off into an ashram or something. He isn't posting. Because he has this very interesting personality that comes through on his Twitter account. But a lot of it is very much so focused in the health of his body. So he talks a lot about the things that he's done. He's become a vegetarian, which, you know, you wonder how that's going to work out with a guy who needs to keep bulk on him in order to protect himself from the hits that he's going to have to absorb on the field. But I think this is a person who understands the long-term implications of this sport on his body. And I think this is a guy that we can trust with the idea that, you know what, he'll make some adjustments. He'll do what he needs to do to keep himself healthy. He's coming off of an off-season in which he has been very active and being sure to keep himself healthy. I think he'll be fine. I think we'd be right to expect that there'll be some drop-off because he has been bearing the brunt of that offense. But I don't expect this to be, you know, a big distress call from the Titans from the Texans that this will turn over a completely new leaf in their offense. I think they're still going to get it to him. They're still going to give him the ball. And I think he'll still get it done, even if it's at a reduced capacity.
You wonder about Indianapolis. Looking at their schedule, they have a tough schedule as well. When you look at their schedule, you wonder about them as far as, you know, they're not going to sneak up on anybody this year. They have, to me, the best young quarterback in the league, as far as I'm concerned. I'm a Redskins fan, but I think Luck is ahead of all those guys, Kaepernick, RG3, and Russell Wilson as well. I think he's ahead of all those guys as far as in terms of being a pure drop back guy. But you wonder, again, year number two, they're going to have a bullseye on them. They're not going to sneak up on anybody. Have they addressed, and you talk about, you brought up one major issue that they had as far as the offensive line. He was sacked 41 times, but there was an unofficial count of 70, it was close to 75. It was unofficial.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that he was hit a lot. Defensively, they couldn't stop anybody last year. They drafted Werner out of Florida State, who can rush the passer. They picked up Vontae Davis, pretty good player. I wonder if that's enough. Leron Landry, can he stay healthy? You wonder if that's enough moving forward to improve that their defense. They have improved their defense. I think offensively they're fine, but defensively they were awful last year.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's going to be enough. So on the offensive side, they've put together this nice, new, shiny offensive line that they're hoping is going to hold up. The problem is, though, if this defense isn't enough, which I'm still not sure that it is, you know, guy racks up, you know, 4,374-odd passing yards last season. You know, and a lot of that is, as you said, because, okay, they're getting in a situation where they can't stop anyone, so they have to get offense quickly to put points up on the board. I don't know that they've done enough defensively to break that cycle. So it still does put a pretty big bullseye on Andrew Luck's back, not just from, you know, carrying the weight of the team on his shoulders, but really being able to get it done, having the ball in his hands quite a bit, and asking a newly pieced together offensive line to figure out how to, you know, protect him at length over a game when there's going to be a lot of dependence on the passing yard, on the passing game to really put up yards and points. Because I just don't know if what they've done on defense is going to be quite enough. You know, and then you wonder how they actually were without Chuck Pagano. So now you come into a season where this still sort of feels like, you know, not quite a rookie, not quite his first year with the team, but it still sort of kind of feels like we don't know exactly how a run of a full season would go with him. And then you have the new offensive coordinator as well. You know, so you just want to see how all the pieces are going to come together. Defensively, I'm not sure that it's been enough. I think they're right to make sure that they they continue to run the offense in the way that they have. I think that Luckin and Reggie Wayne will have improved chemistry this season. In fact, Wayne has even said he's thrilled with the addition of Hamilton, the new offensive coordinator, even if he turns around, happens to not get along with the guy. He's just happy to have someone that Luck trusts as much as Hamilton on the squad. You know, you just wonder if I do think that this team is probably right behind the Texans in terms of, you know, what could happen in the AFC South. Unfortunately, I just don't think the Titans are in any position to come up and challenge the Texans for that top spot. But I think that the Colts are right there. So it's going to depend a lot on how quickly that defense can get itself together.
How about the Titans? You follow the team and know them extremely well. Do they? I thought one of the big, and they had a lot of problems last year. 6-10 would tell you that. But I thought their biggest problem to me was how they, to begin with, was how the quarterback situation was handled. I think you draft a guy with that, you know, with that number one pick, and the way the league's been going in the last couple of years, and you know, to bring in a guy like Matt Hasselbeck, who you know at that point in his career is probably better than Jake Locker. Have him look over Jake Locker. I didn't think they handled Locker well last year. Do they have confidence? Does he have the keys to the car? Are they going to, like, give him, you know, are they going to allow him to make mistakes, allow him to develop and grow as a quarterback without, you know, pulling him, you know, without having a quick hook like they did last year?
Well, and that's the thing. You know, that's why I brought up, you know, what, you know, the fact that he's been starting out slowly in practices during training camp. And, you know, the whole thing, they're saying one thing, but it's sort of like we're seeing another. So Munchak talks about really expecting, allowing almost, I think probably was a more accurate word, allowing Locker to do more. But he still seemed pretty handcuffed in the first preseason game. So I don't know if it's that he's not allowed. We didn't see a lot from him going downfield. So I'm not sure if it's that he's so when I see something like that, I don't think that I'm seeing the confidence still in this guy yet. And you talk about the situation with Hasselbeck, that and how there's been a mishandling of the quarterback situation. That seems to be the story of this team's lives, you know, going all the way back to the whole Collins Vince Young situation. I mean, it's just like, when is it going to happen when there's confidence in a guy? You say, you know what, we're going with him. We're not going to freak out. We're going to let him try to do his thing, get in a rhythm. I don't get what happens with this team. And this is a new head coach. This isn't even Jeff Fisher. This is a whole new regime, and we're seeing sort of the same thing here with Locker. They better get some confidence in him and get it in him quickly, at least to see what he can do. But I don't know. I think you're right. I'm not sure if there's the confidence there. They're saying one thing, and we're seeing another. You know, he got about, I guess I'm trying to read my notes here. I think he got 20 to 22 snaps in the preseason game, and I think it'll be maybe up to 30 coming into the second preseason game against the Bengals. But you just wonder, what are they going to be willing to let him do? Can he just please let him throw a pass downfield so we can see what's happening with this guy? You know, then what's going on with Chris Johnson? You know, that's always the big loop-de-loop with the team as well. Ever since, you know, we had that big year where with the combination of Lindell White when he was still there, the year that the team won 13 games, I think, but then promptly lost in the first round of the playoffs. It's like we haven't really seen Chris Johnson be as effective as we need him to be. And so much of his conversation has been about how he wants to do a lot for himself. You just wonder when he's going to mature to a place where he finally realizes we need him to do a lot, not just for him, but to help move this team forward. And I think the team is stuck in a rut. And I came into last season with very high expectations for the Titans. I am not coming into this season with the same expectations. Again, I just don't think they have done enough, mainly in the showing of confidence to Jake Locker. I don't think that they've done enough to get themselves. They're not as bad as Jacksonville, but I have as little confidence in the team as Jacksonville. And you know, part of me is hoping that they just come out and really, really, really prove me wrong. I have to eat these words. But I just think that they're muddling around, you know, the bottom of the division, and I don't know what it's going to take to get them out of this rut, other than maybe going ahead and letting Locker do whatever Locker does, which we still haven't seen yet.
Speaking of Chris Johnson, you know, last year had 1,200 yards rushing a little bit, and but mainly picked that up at the latter part of the season.
Yeah.
Had a couple big games. We saw the 58 yard run against the Redskins, so we know he still has the explosion in terms of speed. Is it, you know, are they changing schemes as far as going to the? They've been talking about this zone blocking scheme that they're going to. How you think he's going to be? How effective you believe he'll be with that?
Well, I mean, if anybody can find a way to make this offensive scheme work, I think it's Munchak. I mean, I think he has the foresight to understand what he needs to do to put his running back in the best position to be successful. I thought last season that Chris Johnson hadn't figured out how not to rely so much on his speed. So it's almost like if he can't figure out, you know, if he can't find enough space, does he know how to make space? Does he know how to look for a space that may not be open but is coming open? So there's some intelligence on, you know, some football intelligence on his part that I'm still waiting to see, where he's not pigeonholed into relying solely on his speed. You know, so you hope the zone blocking helps, but even in that, he's still going to have to figure out how to get to a spot and then wiggle his way, maybe not sprint his way, but wiggle his way for important yardage to keep the chains moving so that drives don't die. And I didn't see that from him last season. I hope that's what he's been working on in the preseason. It doesn't seem like not in the preseason, in training camps, but it doesn't seem like I've heard a lot about him from training camp. But, you know, you just hope that that's what he's been working on, because that's where he has to move forward to continue to see, you know, it's so important to him. If he wants to put up yards, he's got to figure out how to do it and be patient in his running game, wait for the blocks, allow things to open up so that he can get, again, effective runs, and then maybe sprint downfield for, you know, a 75-yarder. But, I just haven't seen that development in his game yet.
Is Munchak on the hot seat this year?
Yeah, probably so. Because I think, just like me, people came in last season, there was a lot of talk about, you know, especially since, you know, Peyton was gone and the Colts were rebuilding and they got a new head coach. The Colts had a new head coach. I think people really thought that the Titans and Texans were in that spot, you know, and the Texans are a team that just never seemed to be able to get over the hump, you know, as being one of the expansion franchises of that division. So no one really ever has full faith in them. But the Titans have had some success, you know, over several years. And so it was kind of like a nice little pick to be able to say the Titans can come out of the South last season. And people were really disappointed. And I think it would be foolish of us to believe that some of that disappointment did make its way onto the shoulders of Mike Munchak. I definitely think, I don't know, you know, I've been trying to figure out if it could be so bad that he could go mid-season. and I hope that isn't the case. You know, I hope it doesn't get into a slump of a run where it's like, we got to let him go mid-season. But certainly, if it doesn't look well, I think come the end of the season, he could be gone. And then I don't know where the team will go from there. Because it still probably won't look like a franchise that will be desirable to, you know, the guys that we dream about coming back, Cowher, and, you know, those guys that we hope that will make their way back into football. I'm not sure if the job will still be pretty enough. Yeah, and Gruden, exactly. You know, so I'm rooting for him, but I don't know if he, again, I hope it isn't so bad that they don't say mid-season he's got to go. Hopefully he can make it through to the end of the season and really show some improvement for this team.
It just looks like to me, and I've read this and this has been right on the money, that they are a franchise, a team that's kind of like stuck in the middle, which is hard to be in the NFL. I mean, it's easy to be in the NBA because you either – you know, you either there's an elite level group of teams, and there's also there's a small group of teams that's elite, and a small group of teams that are horrible. But most people are in the middle in terms of NBA. But in the NFL, to me, it's hard to be in the middle in the NFL, and it's not a great place to be. And that's to me where they're stuck at. Like they're rebuilding, but you know, are they really trying? Are they really rebuilding? You know, from a standpoint, they still have
right.
Chris Johnson. They still have some of these other veteran guys on their team who are on their roster. So I don't think they are rebuilding, but with that being said, if they're not rebuilding, are they really contending? And you look at them compared, they're not anywhere close to some of these elite AFC. They're not close to the Broncos, or they're not close to Baltimore, some of these other elite teams in the AFC or in the NFL for that matter. So I see a franchise in limbo right now. I don't know necessarily what direction Tennessee is going in. Now, and that would concern me if I were a Titan fan the most.
Yeah, it's a big concern. It's a huge concern. That's why I say, you know, you worry about Mike Munchak, what will happen during the season if they get into a slump, whether he'll make it through to next season. But like I said, you know, to your point, this is a team that you don't really think is contending. Maybe something will happen by week four, and we realize this is they're really making something happen. But from all indications, it's almost like, again, almost with the Jake Locker thing, almost like they're saying we are rebuilding, but maybe they don't really mean it, because enough hasn't happened for me to think there hasn't been an erasing of enough, and there hasn't been an adding of enough to make me say, oh, okay, so I understand, you're rebuilding, you're starting all the way over with a clean slate. I don't see that. And being in that middle spot is definitely not where you want to be in the league, because if you come into the season like that, you fall to the bottom very quickly in the NFL,
right.
Very quickly, especially in, you know, a division where, you know, especially the way the playoff seedings happen in the NFL. I mean, if you're not in the top two spot in your division, then it's basically over for you. So I don't know what this team is doing. Like I said, I'm hoping maybe we see something after the first four games that makes us believe that there is some growth happening. I don't see it. I haven't read anything about it. You know, people aren't even really talking about what's happening with the Titans unless they're covering the Titans. I don't know what's going on, but I hope it works out for the best.
Thank you, Rosalind, as always, for joining us on the program. We certainly will keep you we'll keep in touch with you as far as the upcoming NFL season, NFL preview show, of course, coming up in a couple of weeks. So certainly, hopefully, we can get you on for that as well. And looking forward to another great NFL season. Again, as always, thanks for coming on the program.
Thanks so much for having me. Talk to you soon.
All right, talk to you. That was, of course, Rosalind Ross. Of course, Rosalind Ross joined the program talking AFC South along with Tennessee Titan football. And, you know, I think Texans are going to win a division. I think the Texans, I don't think they'll be as good as they were last year. I think I see them as a, I would say, I think they'll win it. I think they'll be 10-6. I think the Texans are 10-6. I think Indianapolis, you know, 9-7. I think it'll go like that. I think Indianapolis 9-7, Texans 10-6, Tennessee 5-11, 4-12, and Jacksonville probably will be one of the worst teams in football. Probably like a 2-14, 3-13 type season, or maybe 4-12. But I think they're a 2-4 win team. I think Houston. You know, I wonder. A couple things I wonder about. I wonder about Arian Foster, one, and I wonder, is Matt Schaub really a guy who you can win a Super Bowl with? I wonder about that now. I mean, look at the last few Super Bowls. We look at the last five or six Super Bowls, you know, Flacco's proven to be a franchise guy. You saw how he performed in the playoffs. You've seen Breeze, Rodgers win Super Bowls. You've seen Brady get to a Super Bowl. Couple Super Bowls. You've seen Eli Manning, you know, win a couple Super Bowls. Yeah, I mean, if you don't have that top echelon quarterback, I wonder if you can win a Super Bowl, even with a guy that's just very good. And Schaub is a very good player, but I don't think Schaub is a top quarterback. demise. I think he's a top quarterback. I think he's very good. But certainly he has a ton of talent around him. I mean, that offensive line, Arian Foster, the receivers, Andre Johnson, J.J. Watt, they'll have Cushing back. If Ed Reed can stay healthy, Joseph is a good player. They have a ton of talent, without question. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Cyril Coleman Review. I'll see you next week on the next edition of the Cyril Coleman Review. Have a great weekend.